Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Hello and welcome to World Weekly from the Financial Times. I'm Gideon Rachman. Today we're discussing Israel and the challenges facing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And joining me on the line from Israel is our correspondent there, John Reed, and also on the line our Middle East correspondent, David Gardner. John, you've just done a long article on Netanyahu's situation where you start by saying because of Trump and politics in Israel, he should be on top of the world, but he isn't. What's the problem?
The problem is Netanyahu faces three separate police investigations over different affairs that, if any of them were to result in charges being brought, could sensibly bring an end to his career and at minimum will hurt his reputation.
How serious is the threat to him? I mean, it is notable. The Israelis do seem to have a habit of locking up rather senior politicians.
Yeah, he's a consummate political survivor. He's the second longest serving Israeli prime minister after David Ben-Gurion. And if he does stay in office until 2019, which is when the next elections are due, he will be the longest serving Israeli leader ever. The reason there are doubts right now is that these three cases, which I can walk you through if you're interested, rather serious claims of corruption are being raised.
Just give us a flavor. What are the three cases and what's the most serious thing that's haunting him, if you like? And is it getting hotter? I mean, have they been around for a while or is there a particular reason for him to worry now?
This has been around since about November, and a lot of the preliminary work was done by investigative journalists here, notably one named Raviv Drucker, who turned up probably the most serious of the three affairs, which is around military procurement of boats, patrol boats and submarines for the Israeli Navy. It's being alleged in media reports and now investigated by police that the suspicion that a tender to buy this military equipment was conducted in an improper manner, that the business was handed to ThyssenKrupp of Germany without like a due tender process going through. And the main point of suspicion is that Netanyahu's personal family lawyer, David Shimron, was also acting as an advisor to the local sales representative of ThyssenKrupp, which then raised serious questions about conflict of interest. The prime minister has not been named as a criminal suspect in this affair, but it is serious stuff. It's his immediate circle. I should say David Shimron is not just his lawyer, but his second cousin as well.
There are also the other two, just in brief, involve just a sense that he's been giving lavish gifts, been living rather well on the, I suppose, the generosity of people he knows.
Yes, that's exactly right. The first of the cases is called Case 1000 by police, that his wife Sarah, his son Yair, others in his circle were getting lavish gifts, cigars, alcoholic drinks, hospitality when he flew to the UN to give his speech to the General Assembly in 2015. What hasn't been established is whether he gave the men giving these gifts anything in return. He's actually spoken out in his own defense and said, correctly as far as I know, that it's not a criminal offense to get gifts from friends in Israel. But the size of these gifts have raised eyebrows, and also questions have been asked about whether he did anything in exchange in his capacity as prime minister.
Last question on this corruption theme before I turn to David for the broader regional picture. But how much of a threat do you think this is to Netanyahu? You said he could soon be the longest serving Israeli prime minister. On the other hand, one of his predecessors, I think Ehud Olmert, is actually in prison on a corruption charge. So the Israelis do take this stuff quite seriously, don't they?
They do take it very seriously. And I have to say, I think it attests to the quality of Israel's democracy that a sitting prime minister is facing a corruption probe like this. Speaking to your question, it's really the million-dollar question right now, whether police see enough evidence there to bring a case to charge him. And if that were to happen, it would create, I think, a new political reality here. I mean, putting a case together here would take months, if not years, in terms of prosecuting it. But the moment at which police recommend charges, if indeed they do, I think you'll see Likud members beginning to turn against Netanyahu and some of his political rivals pushing for an early election. I'll remind you, the next election is scheduled for 2019.
Okay, well, obviously this kind of issue will be filling the Israeli media, but in the broader region there are perhaps bigger issues, war still raging in Syria, the Iranian issue hotting up again. David, you're sitting in Beirut. How much do you think the advent of Donald Trump as president of the US, which is, I guess, one of the reasons why Netanyahu, at least in theory, should be riding high, how much has that changed the whole regional context, do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, just beginning from where we left off, I mean, the closeness of these two men, not just ideologically, and that is pretty clear, but their willingness to do each other's favor, such as, I believe it was yesterday, possibly the day before, that Netanyahu was at home being questioned by police investigators. And who should come on the telephone but Donald Trump? And, you know, this obviously he milked that for what it was worth to point out, you see, you know, I am a bulwark of the Western security system, not to be trifled with by mere policemen. And, you know, I think Netanyahu returned the compliment more or less by endorsing President Trump's somewhat belated and tepid attack on this spate of anti-Semitic attacks in the United States, for which some blame certain elements in his White House as encouraging it. But no, I mean, he said he's kosher, he's one of us. So, I mean, the closeness of the two has been well remarked here, and it does lead to certain worries, such as we don't really know what the details of Mr. Trump's Middle Eastern policy, we don't know what they are, beginning with the question of Israel-Palestine, where the meeting last month with Netanyahu, he simply said, well, you know, one state, two states, I'll go for whichever one anybody else likes, thereby casually overturning more than two decades of U.S. and international policy on the two-state solution. On Syria, there is a certain amount of worry. I mean, you will have spotted that since about last November, the number of Israeli airstrikes on targets inside Syria has increased exponentially. I mean, they're not all declared, of course, but there have been at least six. And that is, to the extent that Israel is prepared to explain this stuff, it is supposedly on convoys of weapons heading through Syria, supplied by Iran and with intended end user Hezbollah, the Shia paramilitary movement here in Lebanon. I mean, all create the concern, even the expectation, that eventually you might get a set of circumstances in which both the US and Israel decide that despite their antipathy towards Iran, Iran is simply too hard to do anything terribly substantive about. So what's the next best thing? It might be an attack on Hezbollah. And we know this has happened before in 2006, in 1996, wars between Israel and Lebanon, or rather between Israel and Hezbollah. So there is a worry about that.
In a second, David.
Yes.
I'd like to come back to Iran in a second, David, but let me just bring John in on some of the issues you've already raised. On the Palestinian issue, there was a sense initially that Trump was going to give Netanyahu almost everything he wanted, including moving the embassy to Jerusalem, green light on settlements. It seems like now, though, he's slightly moderated that. What is the current Israeli and indeed Netanyahu government view of Trump? Do they still think he's great news for them?
I think they say that he's great news for him. I think privately they're probably a bit puzzled, and it may indeed be the case that they don't really know what he's going to do. I have not had any clear indications yet that there is a very clear White House policy on what they want to do going forward in terms of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Trump has named his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, as an advisor on the conflict. He made some remarks in the press conference where they both spoke in Washington last month about reining in building and settlements. There's also been talks here that Washington and Israel will be coordinating on Israeli building in the settlements, that there'll be some kind of arrangement made. It's all rather vague, and the other piece of it that makes it more complicated is Netanyahu probably wants to be reined in to an extent, given that his rivals inside his hard-right coalition, notably the Jewish Home Party, but also some members of his Likud, would like to build without restraint in the settlements. Some are proposing annexing parts of the West Bank, basically opening up a much tougher new reality that I think he doesn't want to deal with the consequences of, and indeed he knows would be very bad for Israel. So it's a complicated picture. He almost wants to be restrained by Trump. At the same time, I don't think Trump has really set his policy here. If he has, I've seen no concrete indications that he has.
Well, let's end then by discussing perhaps the, you know, what's always been maybe the most dangerous issue over the region, which is Iran. David, you alluded to it earlier. I mean, Trump certainly campaigned on the idea that the Iran deal was a disaster and that he was going to rip it up. You seem to be skeptical that they'll actually do that. And what do you think the Israelis also want, David?
It's not entirely clear that despite the vigor with which Netanyahu campaigned against the nuclear deal, that now that it's in place, that they would want to simply rip it up and, you know, stampede Iran back into a program which has, you know, to a great extent been mothballed. So that's not entirely clear. But, I mean, it seems to me that despite being surrounded by clash of civilization merchant in the White House, I mean, there will be people there saying also that there are other levers that he can pull, notably on sanctions. There is a quite fierce array of non-nuclear sanctions already in place, which are being applied vigorously and can be strengthened without even new legislation, and periodically are. Certainly at least twice in the last 3 or 4 months. So there's that. Depends also, I suppose, on how Iran chooses to play it. I mean, it has been to an extent trying to sort of test the mettle of the new U.S. administration by, for example, carrying out ballistic missile tests and so on. And so far, we haven't really had a response that you can sift through and say, right, that's what they are going to do. I mean, what happened after the missile tests? Well, the National Security Advisor said that Iran has been put on notice, whatever that means. And of course, that National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn, is no longer there. So it's still very early days, but it is, you know, the potential for a standoff, even a showdown, is clearly there. It may also be dawning on President Trump that even with his administration's hostility towards Iran, the U.S. is in fact in alignment with Iranian forces in both Iraq and Syria, even if it's not obviously in alliance with them. The Iranian-backed militias are in the field west of Mosul, and while U.S. Special Operations Forces are embedded with Iraqi forces trying to capture this city from Islamic State. Only days ago, when the Syrian regime, as it were, recaptured Palmyra from ISIS for the second time, that was a very odd coalition indeed, involving Russia, elements of the Syrian army, Hezbollah, and U.S. airstrikes. So the world is a great deal more complicated, at least in Syria and Iraq, than the simple formulas that we've heard from the Trump White House so far.
I guess, though, another calculated thing that they'll have to factor in the White House is that they seem to be heading for a much more immediately serious nuclear confrontation with North Korea, and there might be a limit to the number of nuclear showdowns they want to have. But finally, John, I mean, give me a sense of what do the Israelis really think, if you have an insight into that, about Iran? Because as long as I've followed this issue, Netanyahu has specialised in very dark warnings about Iran, comparing it to Nazi Germany, demanding that it be dealt with. Do you think that actually he does want to force the issue?
It's a good question. question. I don't think he actually wants to revisit the nuclear agreement. It's very interesting to see how his rhetoric has changed. And indeed, it's very interesting to talk to military officials in Israel who perhaps are closer to the heart of what actually goes on here, who speak about the deal as something that they not only live with, but that perhaps will help contain the problem for another 10 years. It's not perfect. They would like to see it changed, but it's a lot better than nothing. And if you put that next to the change in Netanyahu's rhetoric, he has certainly stopped talking about tearing up the deal, and is much more focused on practical issues around Iranian influence in the region, and notably in Syria and in Lebanon through Hezbollah. He's going to be in Moscow this week speaking to Putin about Iranian forces in Syria, and basically get across Israel's message that it does not want to see a permanent Iranian military force presence in Syria. So again, it's subtle, but as someone who lives here and follows what's going on, I think Israel's ambitions in terms of containing Iran, it's no longer about neutralizing its nuclear threat as much as containing it in the region.
Okay, with that, we'll leave it for now. Thank you very much indeed to John Reed in Israel and to David Gardner in Lebanon. Until next week, goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.